Hi, good morning. We're going to be reading from Matthew chapter 20 this morning. If you want to go ahead and turn. I taught this passage before several months ago, but I can't get it off my mind, so that's what we're going to learn. It's good to be in church, you know it? I was on travel for work several weeks ago, and I missed several services in a row, and it's just really good when you get back and reconnect with church. You know, so many people try to live their lives without a church home, and it's just unnecessary, you know? Try to live their lives without some kind of guidance or some kind of North Star. And we need a direction, don't we? I mean, we need a direction in our lives to tell us where to go. So many people are convinced that all this just happened. You know, it just came out of nothing. That, you know, at some point, because this planet has water and lightning and an atmosphere, that all the ingredients just kind of came together and now we're here. Just because the ingredients just kind of came together over billions of years. All the complexity that we have before us, all the complexity in our bodies and our spirits, and all the complexity in the animals and the plants and the ecosystem around us just happened. I tell you what, I'm going to take this watch apart right here. All the cogs and all the springs and the battery. And I'm going to pile it up right here in a pile, then scatter it across this floor. And let's just sit here and watch and see how long it takes for it to just come back together and start ticking. It'll just happen, right? All the ingredients are here for a watch. If I wait long enough, it'll just happen. It's not going to happen. It's not even going to happen if I try to put it back together. It's not going to happen without a masterful hand, a watchmaker that knows how to knit it all back together, and make it all happen. So when we wonder how this thing came to be, there had to be a master. There had to be a God that made it come into existence. It's just too complex otherwise. Then some argue, well, are we even really here? Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a little bit too deep, isn't it? I believe we are. I believe we're here. I believe God did it, okay? He's a big God. You know, Brother Mike was teaching the other night, and he gave the dimensions of heaven, right? Out of the Scripture, he talked about how big heaven is. And something just struck me. You know, if it's got a size, then only so many people can fit. And I got thinking, well, how many people? You know, what if I took the? I mean, there's an equation there, right? If we know the size and we know the volume of a human body, we could figure out roughly how many people could fit, couldn't we? Because we're smart. That's math. And then you think, well, who says that we're going to be this size in heaven? So, if we were infinitely smaller, then I don't know how many people could fit into that space. And then I got a little bit crazy and started thinking, well, you know, God could, just like a strobe light, He could blink us, we could occupy the same space. He could blink us in and out of existence and carry the consciousness across all those different dimensions. And now you've got countless number of people who could be there. That got a little crazy there, didn't it? But we limit God to the equations and the things that we know and the things that we can understand. But we forget how complex God can be and how complex God is and the things that He can work out. You know, if you just look across the story of your life, I'm a firm believer in God has a plan for us. And I believe we we can either be in God's will or not in God's will. But God has all this story of all of our lives and all of our interactions weaving together to make His purpose come to be. And I believe we have our own will, okay? So I'm not one of those that believes we're walking around playing out a script and we're all robots. But I also believe that we have a sovereign God and that it all works together. He said it all works together. So just imagine the complexity of all the millions of people, hundreds of millions of people on earth weaving together in and out of circumstances and situations to get to God's purpose. And Him caring enough about one of you, one of us, in the middle of all that movement to make sure that we're taken care of. And that He can see 3 weeks and 3 years and 30 years down the road where you are and where you're going to be, and that He can navigate you through all that to make what's best for you work out. That's a big God. And it's a complex God. And His ways are not our ways. But I'm proud of that because I'm way too simple to take care of even myself. But He's big enough to take care of all of us. And I love Him for it. Okay. To get started this morning, I want to read a story that I got off the internets. That was a joke. You guys aren't paying attention, are you? I got it off the internets. All right. Two shopkeepers were bitter rivals. Their stores were directly across the street from one another, and they would spend each day keeping track of one another's business, looking after each other. If one got a customer, he would triumph and smile at his rival. One night, an angel appeared to one of the shopkeepers in a dream and said, "I will give you anything you ask, but whatever you receive, your competitor will receive twice as much. Would you be rich? You can be very rich, but he will be twice as wealthy. Do you wish to live a long life? You can, but his life will be longer and healthier. What is your desire?" The man frowned and thought for a moment. And then he said, "Here is my request. Strike me blind in one eye." So many times in our life, we see life as a competition with others, don't we? We want what's good as long as it's better than what somebody else has got. We don't take pleasure in other people's success because we're jealous, we're petty. We would rather other people suffer along with us than them do well. And that's part of human nature. And, you know, there's a lot of parts of human nature that I just don't understand. Some things I just don't fathom. Unfortunately, this one I understand. I don't know why, but ever since a little kid, I've always been very competitive. I've always wanted to be first. I just have. And I remember playing with my cousins and neighborhood kids at the time, and we ride our bicycles up the road. I had to be the one that was in front. And, you know, I bet that got on their nerves. But I carried those traits all the way up into adulthood before I realized, you know, what I was doing. I was just competitive, and I had to win. And that's just no way to be. Now, I can truly say that now I can take pleasure in other people's success, and I'm happy that I can. And I really do. I genuinely do take pleasure in other people's success. But I know that my nature is that I want to win. So I have to fight that against myself. And, you know, probably the reason I can take pleasure in other people's success is because at some point along the way I learned that about myself. We don't correct ourselves unless we learn our blind spots, right? So, you know, we don't want other people to have or to do better than what we have or do. And that's not the way God has things set up. If you'll look in Matthew chapter 20, it says, "For the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning, around 6 a.m., to hire laborers to his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them to his vineyard. And when about the third hour, which is about 9 a.m., he went out and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. and said unto them, Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way. In verse 5, again he went out about the sixth hour, which is about noon, and the ninth hour, which is about 3 p.m., and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, around 5 p.m., he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all the day idle? In verse 7 it says, They say unto him, Because no man hath hired us. He saith unto them, Go ye into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. In verse 8, So when he was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, Call the laborers, and give them their hire, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that were hired the 11th hour, at 5 p.m., they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. They likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house. So, to break that story back down, the folks who worked from morning to evening got the same pay as the folks who just worked the final hour of the day. And it upset them. It made them mad because they felt like they deserved more. And yet that morning they had agreed to a price. So it wasn't that these guys had been cheated by the gentleman. It was that they had been made equal to those who had done less. So let's explore this just a little bit. Let's get back up to verse 1. And this parable, it says, For the kingdom of heaven is likened to an householder which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. Jesus' hearers would have immediately known that the employer represents God and the vineyard represents Israel. And the vineyard was a well-known motif in the Old Testament for God's people, Israel. So the laborers who were sent out are the people of God called to be his servants. And God went out and picked them, the employer went out and picked them personally that morning. God picks us personally for his task, for his job. In the verse 3, it says that he went out and he found people standing idle. So it's already mid-morning at this point, about 9 a.m., and people are standing idle in the marketplace. Now, there's a place up on South Cobb Drive when I used to drive a truck into work that I never would go get my gas because the trees around that gas station were lined with Hispanics just laid up on the hill waiting for somebody to pull up in a truck and load them up to go do a day's labor. Because every time I would pull up, they'd flog my truck. And, you know, that's just not comfortable, okay? Because I'm like, no, I'm good. And I don't even know if they understood me, but I know they knew this. You know, get away. So, you know, I can picture this in my mind, these people in the marketplace, they're waiting for someone to hire them for work. And, you know, he hired everybody that was there early in the morning. Because he didn't have enough, he kept going back throughout the day. So these guys were standing idle. And I just want us to have this thought about us. We should never be caught standing idle. We should never be the ones that aren't doing what the work that's put in front of us. We should never be the ones that's not doing God's purpose that he set before us. We should never be the one on our jobs that's found goofing off. There's this guy that he works on the program that I'm on, and we just gave him a peer recognition award. That's where his peers recognize him for hard work. And there's something about him that I've noticed is he's on a task. And when he needs a tool or he needs a part or he needs something, he literally, as much as he can get by with, runs to get what he needs and runs back to his task. Runs and runs. And he's just always focused on what he needs to do. And you talk to him just a minute, you'll find out real quick, he was a Marine. Okay? This is just a bonus right here. But I found that if you can ever hire a Marine, hire them. Because I don't know what they teach those guys or what they put in their head, but they just make it happen. Any Marines in here? No? There we go. That, Brother Donald, that does not surprise me one bit. You see what I'm saying? I'm talking about whatever they do. Maybe we should all go through that before we step into adulthood. But this guy runs to his task, and he runs and runs and runs. And he fell asleep during break one day. He didn't even get off the airplane to go to break. He had on his safety harness. He's up on the wing, and he was up there trying to get a task done. And everybody went to break on him, so he said, "Well, I'm just gonna lay right here and take a rest." And he fell asleep. And I was standing down on the floor, and I knew he was asleep, and it's not good to be asleep. But I know how hard he works. So I kind of, let's just say I woke him up without letting him knowing that I knew he was asleep. And he's like, you know, ready to charge the next hill. And said, "Man, I fell asleep." I said, "Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. You know, it was only like 30 seconds into work time." So just the conscientiousness of us putting our hand to the plow and getting our work done. Over in Ecclesiastes 11:4, you don't have to turn. It says, "He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not weep." I mean, it's okay to be a thinker to some respect, but if you're just going to sit around and observe the wind and watch the clouds, at some point somebody's got to get some food on the table. At some point, somebody's got to make it where we can eat, right? No work gets done. Just kind of floating through life. In Proverbs 20:4, it says, "The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing." Just coming up with excuses not to get out there and work. Yeah, it's cold. But somebody's got to break the ground and put some seed in it if we're going to have a harvest. You know, and you can use this in your work life, or you can use this in your life for God. You know, the community did a pretty good thing yesterday. I don't know if you guys are aware of the Love Loud thing that happened. But a lot of people got some help yesterday because some volunteers came together and brought a lot of good things for the less fortunate in the community, and I guess the surrounding communities. And it took some work. There were tents put up, and there were tables set out, and there were things that were registered, and there was food prepared. And because people were willing to get their hands dirty and work, people got help. Just like the ministries within this church. Because people are willing to invest their time and their energy, people get help. And that's what this ministry is all about. It's all about reaching out and helping people. And it does take work. And God's service, even though it's always worth it, it is almost never convenient. So if you're looking for something that fits into your schedule or fits into your time or isn't cold outside or it's comfortable for you, they don't call that work. They call that a hobby. Because you can do it or not do it. You can show or not show. It's not really a responsibility. But once you shine up for God's work, it's time to show up. It's time to do it. It's time to do it when it's not comfortable. It's time to do it in the evening when you don't feel like getting here and you've had a hard day at work. It's still time to be in your spot and do your job. It's time to do it on the weekend when the food ministry calls you or the card ministry calls you or now the sitting ministry calls you. You know, it's time to step in and fill your role because it takes work. So in verse 6, it says, "And about the 11th hour, 5 p.m., he went out and found others standing idle, and saith unto them, Why stand ye here all day idle?" So idle keeps showing up throughout these verses. And here at 5 p.m., it was at the end of the day, these folks have very little to offer this work in the vineyard at the end of the day. But still, the employer went out and got them and said, "Just come do what you can. Come do what you can at the end of the day." You know, some of us were later in life before we got saved and came into the ministry. And you should never let that discourage you that you won't be able to do enough or can't do enough. Because God called you into the ministry when He called you into the ministry. And He would have you do what you can do to complete your work. And we've already read the story. At the end of the day, they all got paid the same. They all got paid the same. So never hold back from guilt, from the guilt of having started late. Just do your thing. And it says in verse 7, they say unto him, because no man hath hired us. And he saith unto them, go ye out into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall ye receive. Focus on the words, whatsoever is right. Who decides what's right for the pay for your labor? God decides what's right. At the end of the story, you can see that the guys who were hired in the morning didn't think it was right that the guys who were hired in the afternoon got the same pay. But who decides what's right? God does. So many times we judge where we are by what other people are getting. That's God's business. We need to judge where we are by the hand that we're being dealt and the things that God has in front of us. Quite frankly, God would probably love to bless some of us, but we couldn't handle it. God wouldn't destroy us by blessing us. What would happen if you guys all, a lot of you have kids, what would happen if you set a big bowl of nice chocolate out on the table and told your kids, this is your blessing, just enjoy? What would you be cleaning up later? Yep. You'd have a mess on your hands because they would eat and make themselves absolutely sick. If God did that for us in the blessings of life, think about all the lottery winners that have not been brought up and trained on how to handle themselves with a big load of money or a big load of blessing. And they win that lottery, and I'll just say it, committing that sin of gambling, getting that money by ill means. And I'm not all to the extreme on that, okay? It is what it is, okay? It's gambling. They get that money, and it's not a blessing to them. They go destroy their lives and everybody around them because they can't handle that big bowl of chocolate. And they'd be better off not having it at all. And you know, and we get favor through our lives, and we get offers, and we get blessings put in front of us or things put in front of us that we have to decide whether that fits in what God would have us to do or not. Because sometimes we can choose the thing that looks like a blessing and not realize that that's the thing that's going to destroy us or the things that matter. And I've told this story before, but we once had a preacher, and this was years ago, so none of you know who I'm talking about. We had a preacher that, you know, he didn't preach here, but he was a preacher within the church. Got blessed with a job that put him working on Sundays for a certain amount, and he's no longer in church anymore. And that was at least a decade ago, maybe a little bit more. And had he denied that blessing, he could have potentially reaped the blessing of all this for another decade. A little bit of money. You know, I'll just tell you, at the time, he said, what can I do? They're paying me $50,000. $50,000 a year. And some of you are sitting there saying, $50,000? Man, I would have to do it too. That's so much money. Some of you are sitting there saying, $50,000? I can't buy groceries with that. That's no money at all. Who would go sell this for 50 grand? What if I said 300 grand? Would that change it? What if I said 400 grand? What if I said 700? Comparing 50 and 700 to the things of God is the same. They both equal up to nothing compared to what God has to offer us. So we have to know in our core what God wants for us, so that we don't trade it for something that doesn't matter. That was not on the outline. So God would have us be rewarded by His judgment. In verse 8 it says, so even was come, and the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, call the laborers and give them their hire. And he said, give them the hire, but do it beginning the last unto the first. Now, one commentary I read said that this employer was a troublemaker. He said, this employer just wanted to cause trouble. Now, I've already told you that this employer was a picture of God. So I denounce what that commentary, the way he set this. He said because he wanted the people who had worked all day to see the people who had gotten there later get the same gift, and he wanted to cause that strife amongst the people. Oh, that's just goofy, okay? Because this is God. This is a picture of God in the Scripture wanting to teach us a lesson. So what he was teaching is, first of all, that he decides how people get blessed. And second of all, if you've agreed to a price, that's your agreed to price. That's it. You know, I remember when I was, I guess I was 17, 18 years old, I was working at the theater up here in Carrollton. I had a doctor's appointment in that theater not too long ago, by the way. It's not there anymore. I guess that means time moves on with or without us, right? Y'all know the place I'm talking about where the old Twin Theater used to be? They tore it down and put a doctor's office there. So I used to work there, and I think I made, I think it was about $3.35 an hour. And the owner there had hired an adult in. I guess I thought I was an adult at the time, but I was 17, 18. She had hired an adult in. I think she paid him like $4.25 an hour. And somehow or another, we found out about it. We were upset. We were upset. And, you know, it wasn't fair because I knew everything. I was running the place. But it wasn't fair. No, I really was. That's not a delusion. I know I have my delusions, but I was running it. Don't we all have our delusions? This place would crumble without me. But in my mind, at least, I was running the place. And he was making, you know, I don't know, a dollar more, whatever it was. And she had decided to do that, I guess, because he was an adult and he had greater needs and, you know, whatever. She probably wanted some more oversight, some more adult oversight. But when some of the people on the crew had started murmuring, she called me into the office and said, "This is a learning experience for you. This is a teaching moment for you. You don't talk about what other people make. That is no concern to you. I have hired you, and I am paying you what we agreed to. And what I pay anybody else is none of your business." That was my first lesson. It was pretty... Is that clear? Was that clear to y'all? That's just the way it is, you know, and that's a picture of the way God blesses us also. We can go get bitter because other people are being blessed, or we can go enjoy that blessing with them and show that we're grown-ups and that we love people and care about people. And we can just be mature Christians and not show that junk. Now, you're going to have some emotions like that, okay? You're a human being. You're going to have those emotions. But you need to not let that emotion take control of you. You need to dump it and go support people. So, in verse 13, I'm going to jump forward a little bit. "But he answered one of them and said, 'Friend, I do thee no wrong.'" And God cannot do wrong, by the way. "Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? Take that as thine and go thy way. I will give unto this last even as unto thee." In other words, don't tell me what to do. It's my money, it's my labor, it's my hire. I'll do what I want to do. In verse 15, he said, "Is it not lawful for me to do what is mine, what I will with my own? Is thine eye evil because I am good?" In other words, I didn't cheat you, so I'm not evil. You didn't get cheated, so I decided to bless somebody else. How does that make me evil? "So the last shall be first, and the first last. For many be called, but few chosen." So they didn't become unhappy until they compared themselves with others. You can live in misery comparing yourself with others. They were unhappy with others' good fortune. That was just it. Somebody worked an hour and got a full day's pay. They had some good fortune that day. Shouldn't make us unhappy. They were angered by God's grace on others. I've lived my whole life. I've been saved since I was 11 years old, okay? That's a lot of years. Why should somebody else get to go to heaven that's been saved 6 months or 3 months? Now, you know, all this time in church, all this time reading, studying, teaching. Why should somebody else that got saved on their deathbed get to go to heaven and get the same reward? That's God's business. He can bless them how He wants to. You know what? If I could trade, if I could trade a Christian life with the life that you have when you don't have God and get saved on my deathbed, I would pick the Christian life any day. Because there is peace. There is peace in failure when you're living in God's will. Because there is failure in God's will, by the way. We need those failures to strengthen us. And it's just a beautiful thing to see a failure, to experience a failure, it to hurt, and you to know God's working something out. And then 6 months or 6 years later, understand why you had to fail. Because finally God showed you why you went through that. It just strengthens so much more who God is. And that orchestra that we talked about when we started here, of how He's weaving all the complexities of everybody's life to make it work out for us. God is that strong, and He is that real, and He is that real in our lives, that He works those things out. If we were paid on our own merits, we'd all come up short for a place in heaven. That's for sure. So, first of all, the parable says that grace is received, not deserved. Secondly, God's grace is about mercy and not about fairness as viewed by man. And thirdly, God's grace is for the last as well as the first. Thank you for your attention.